is for What's Universe Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A U.S. congressional panel holds a hearing Monday on the claim President Donald Trump said his predecessor, Barack Obama, wiretapped his New York headquarters ahead of last year's election. Lawmakers will also question the extent of Russian involvement in trying to influence that election. Congressman Devin Nunes, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee, appearing on the Fox News Sunday broadcast, said new information provided last week did not change his view. There was no physical wiretap of Trump Tower.
We have a lot of surveillance activities in this country, and I think the concern that the Trump administration has is, you know, were they actually using surveillance activities to know what they were up to? Because we know that that happened with General Flynn. We know that his name was unmasked, and we know that it was leaked out to the press.
Both the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, James Comey, and National Security Agency Chief Admiral Mike Rogers will testify Monday. The Trump administration also denied it colluded with the Russians to tilt the election outcome in favor of Mr. Trump. The ranking committee Democrat Adam Schiff said the panel will also try to find out from Director Comey the extent of Russian involvement in the election.
I think people need to understand we are in a global war of ideas. It's not communism versus capitalism, but it is authoritarianism versus democracy. And Putin is very much at the vanguard of that autocratic movement, and that ought to concern all of us.
Schiff said he hopes to better understand Russian motivations and tactics. The Saudi-led coalition fighting in Yemen has called on the UN to place the Red Sea port of Hodeidah under its supervision after at least 42 Somalis were killed in an attack on their boat heading to Sudan. The attackers are unknown. Meanwhile, the crew of a Comoros-flagged oil tanker hijacked off the Somali coast last week are free as a result of negotiations between local elders and regional authorities with pirates. This is VOA News. Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has left Baghdad for Washington in a meeting with President Trump. Mr. Abadi said they will talk about the fight against terrorism and how to complete what he called the final stage of defeat of Islamic State. Mr. Abadi's visit comes as Iraqi forces, backed by helicopters, battle Islamic State defenders in western Mosul. They're reportedly closing in on the al-Nuri Mosque in the Old City, where IS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared his caliphate back in 2014. Three American soldiers were wounded Sunday when an Afghan soldier opened fire at them at a base in Helmand Province in southern Afghanistan. The Afghan Special Forces soldier was shot and killed. The U.S. soldiers are receiving medical care, according to NATO's Resolute Support Mission. So-called insider attacks in which Afghan security personnel would turn their guns on colleagues have dwindled in number with fewer foreign troops in the country and new security measures. The war of words between Europe and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan continue. Mr. Erdogan, referring to German Chancellor Angela Merkel, said she, like the Netherlands, have engaged in Nazi practices against Turks in Europe. The row began when Dutch, German, and other European authorities barred Turkish officials from taking part in rallies in support of next month's Turkish constitutional referendum, which would grant Mr. Erdogan sweeping new powers. Germany's foreign minister denounced the latest comments as having crossed a boundary. President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, 10th Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Neil Gorsuch, goes before a Senate panel Monday at the start of his widely watched confirmation hearings for the seat vacated 13 months ago by the death of Associate Justice Antonin Scalia. Opening statements are expected to consume the first day, with Judge Gorsuch's testimony to follow. The process is a far cry from what it used to be, according to Georgetown University constitutional law professor Randy Barnett.
There weren't any live confirmation hearings at all until the mid-20th century, and they didn't become routine until after the New Deal, after World War II. This whole ordeal is somewhat of a modern development.
His confirmation would retain the 5-4 narrow conservative advantage on the 9-member court. Malaysian police Sunday said they're looking for more North Korean suspects, including what's called an important person in the killing last month of the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. At least 7 North Koreans are already being sought in the poisoning death of Kim Jong-nam at the Kuala Lumpur airport. French authorities Sunday said that blood tests determined that a suspected Islamic extremist consumed drugs and alcohol before attacking 2 soldiers at Orly Airport in Paris who shot him dead. But Ziad Ben Balghazem's motives remain unknown. The Tunisian-born father of the French citizen denied his son was a terrorist. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, March 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Voter registration for Sierra Leone's 2018 presidential election begins today, Monday.
Firstly, you must be a Sierra Leonean by citizenship, and you must have attained the age of 18 on the date that is stated for voting. And there is a cutoff point age-wise regarding eligibility.
Arba Masekwa is Communications Director at the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone. Ugandan authorities on Sunday stopped an outspoken Makerere University researcher from leaving the country. More and more South Sudanese are saying no to preconditions for attending this month's national dialogue. And Zambia's main opposition party criticizes President Aga Longu's speech on national values and principles.
My argument is that in addition to the issues that he talked about, he did not touch on the issues that kick to bread and butter for the citizens on a daily basis.
Cornelius Muitwa is the deputy spokesman for the United Party for National Development, and President Donald Trump's proposed budget comes under scrutiny by Democrats and some concerned Republicans. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Voter registration for Sierra Leone's 2018 presidential and parliamentary elections begins today, Monday. The process will run for a month and is limited to Sierra Leoneans in the country. But as Kelvin Lewis reports from Freetown, election monitors are raising concerns about the process.
As day breaks today, some 3,300 registration centers all over the country will be opening their doors. These centers are equipped with machines which are programmed to capture the biometric details of an estimated 3.5 million Sierra Leoneans from a population of 7.2 million people. Albert Masako is the director of communications at the National Electoral Commission. He says the registrants must be citizens.
Firstly, you must be a Sierra Leonean by citizenship, and you must have attained the age of 18 on the date that is stated for voting. So all persons who are 18, and there is a cutoff point age-wise regarding eligibility. All of those who were born on the 7th of March, the year 2000, are qualified, because if we are talking about 18 years and the date for the conduct of elections is the 7th of March 2018. So basically, age is very, very much key. Also, of sound mind, somebody has to be of sound mind. If you are a citizen, if you are aged 18, you also have to be of a sound mind. Then you must make yourself available at a registration center to go through the process.
Marcella Sambasi is the chairperson of the National Elections Watch, a local group who have been monitoring elections since the year 2000. She says they are going to put out 900 observers to monitor the registration process. Marcella Sambasi says they are worried about the process.
But even before our observers go to the field in a few hours, I mean, some early concerns are coming to the fore. You know, we're sensing low civic education as to how the process would look like. And in fact, this is the very first time that there is a fusion of the civil registration and voter registration. So it's actually a new process to Sierra Leoneans.
Opposition political parties have before now raised the question of the dual registration. This is conducting a civil registration and a voter registration at the same time. The response has been that the whole exercise will cost the government less money if done at the same time. There seems to be quite a few unresolved questions. The tedious nature of filling the forms and the questions asked, which are deemed to be too complex for a largely illiterate population. However, as the process starts in a few hours' time, the chairperson of the National Elections Watch says they will support the process, but they will not keep quiet if they see things going wrong. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND, says President Edgar Lungu's speech on national values and principles delivered last Friday to Parliament should have focused more on bread and butter issues affecting most Zambians. In his speech, the president talked about increasing cases of moral decay in the country, the need for Zambians to show patriotism by buying Zambian-made goods and services rather than foreign goods. He also promised to promote and uphold democracy and reduce Zambia's high poverty level. UPND deputy spokesman Cornelius Mwitwa says Mr. Longu's criticism of child defilement and early marriages are all symptoms of a failing economy. Mwitwa also said the Zambian society is not heavily divided, as the president said, but rather the political arena that is heavily divided.
Well, when you talk about defilement, early marriages of the girl child, all those are symptomatic of a failing economy. Because if you are going to have children getting married early, it means on one hand that many people have nothing tangible to do and they opt to go into marriage because there is nothing to look up to. And also it shows that adults are letting their children get married because school opportunities are limited. Because where a girl child is properly in school, the incidence of early child marriage is diminished. That is not to say that was wrong. I think that was a well-meant position to espouse and begin to remind the nation of the need to try and promote a culture of morality, a culture devoid of electoral violence and gender-based violence. I think those were well-meant. But beyond that, my argument is that there are so many pressing issues that needed attention that in addition to the issues that he talked about gender-based violence, early marriages and electoral violence and on, he did not touch on the issues that pick to bread and butter for the citizens on a daily basis.
The president did say that the poverty levels in Zambia remain unacceptable. Reducing poverty, he said, vulnerability and inequalities are central pillars of the National Development Plan and will continue to be part of the National Development Agenda. So he did talk about some of these.
Well, I didn't think that he gave enough time and attention that was required, given that from the time he assumed office, he never interacts with the media. He never holds the usual presidential press conferences where he would give the media and the citizens through the media an opportunity to question him on the state of affairs, or the state of the nation, on various issues. So one would have thought that given the economic crunch that the nation is faced with, where we have liquidity problems, no money in circulation, businesses are closing up, you know, life has just really like come to a standstill. The citizens were hopeful that perhaps that this state of the nation address, it being the first of its kind, other than official opening of parliament, one would have thought that he could have gone to the core issues affecting the citizens.
The president also talked about the lack of patriotism among Zambians, to the point that he's talking about how some Zambians prefer foreign goods or services over Zambian products.
I think that that was more of a fiction. I think he was trying to add a romantic touch to his speech, trying to speak Zambian. I think the level at which the globe now is evolving is that you cannot promulgate a policy of buying Zambian if your Zambian goods that you're producing are not competitive, because we live in a global village where people have access to goods and services from anywhere around the globe at the touch of a button. And therefore, people are not going to be brought back home through pronouncements of patriotism if the goods and services that are on the market are not competitive. I think what should have been talking about is to encourage competition, to encourage good products, good packaging, and they say that we are ready to stand in competition in this global market, because there is no way, surely, I will be going to buy less qualitable goods because I want to promote Zambian. Zambian products have to be competitive because that's the age we live in. And even then, whatever is being produced in the country is usually agricultural, and those products are actually bought and consumed without much competition at all.
Cornelius Mwitwa is the deputy spokesman for the opposition United Party for National Development of Zambia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Today is Monday, March 20th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Ugandan authorities on Sunday stopped an outspoken Makerere University researcher from leaving the country. Dr. Stella Nyanzi said she had been invited by Amsterdam University to be a keynote speaker at an international conference that should have begun yesterday, Sunday. According to the Uganda Daily Monitor, immigration authorities had told Ms. Nyanzi that she had been blacklisted from traveling because she had a pending case. But a police commander later said there was miscommunication between the police and immigration. Monitor reporter Salomon Arinetua says that Dr. Nyanzi had been a critic of President Yoweri Museveni and his wife.
Apparently, Stella Nyanzi was blocked from leaving Uganda for traveling to Netherlands to attend a conference. And when she reached immigration, she wasn't allowed to check in. She wasn't given a plausible reason why she couldn't continue with her travels. The immigration officer simply told her that she was given what they called a travel ban. That's why she wasn't allowed to travel. She had trouble recently with the government, with the authorities. She's been very much critical of the government, particularly the president and the first lady.
You mentioned Stella, or Ms. Nyanzi, has been very critical of the first lady. Can you tell us why?
The president, during the campaigns last year, the president put his sanitary pad for school going girls. And then the first lady turns around and says the government doesn't have money for sanitary pads, but the president had promised. Stella has used her Facebook page to criticize that, using very sexually explicit language.
Is she still at Makerere University? I know some time ago she was suspended. Is she back at Makerere?
Yes, she's back. She was suspended and an investigation instituted into her conduct. And the investigation, by and large, generated her. So she was reinstated.
During the election last year, was she a member of the opposition party or what?
She's not a member per se of Uganda's biggest opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change. But she's a strong, the default supporter of Dr. Kizza Besigye. And during the election, she ran a social media Facebook for Besigye campaign. And the campaign she was running using very strong language was clearly rubbing government functionaries, was angering.
Solomon Arinetwe is a reporter with the Ugandan Daily Monitor. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. More and more South Sudanese are saying no to preconditions for attending the country's national dialogue scheduled for later this month. The head of the National Alliance, an umbrella group of 9 South Sudanese opposition political parties, says he will not take part in the dialogue because its results have been predetermined by the government. But the head of the Democratic Change Party says President Salva Kiir has assured him that the national dialogue will be an inclusive one. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
Peter Mayen, who runs the National Alliance and is also head of the People's Liberal Party, describes the national dialogue as a one-party dialogue. Information Minister Michael Makwe told reporters last week that rebels and people living in rebel-held areas must first renounce rebellion before being allowed to participate in the dialogue. Mayen says the process would be inclusive so that armed groups will lay down their weapons at the end of the exercise.
We will not be part of this because we know it will not produce results. And there's no point to be part of a process that will not produce results. And if the process needed to produce results, then the government must find a suitable ways to negotiate and fight and build the confidence of the armed opposition so that they come in the table.
Mayen is urging the international community not to fund the national dialogue if it excludes armed opposition groups and key opposition political parties not in the Kiir administration.
We strongly believe that the national dialogue should produce indicators, should produce results. At the absence of the armed oppositions, there is little can be achieved in practicality or in actual sense on the grounds toward peace and towards the final solutions to South Sudan. Dynamic problems, because most of the problems in South Sudan are centered in the hearts of governance.
Anyoti Adigo, head of the opposition Democratic Change Party and newly appointed agriculture minister, denies the government has set any preconditions for participation. Adigo says Mr. Kiir, whom he met with 2 days ago, wants the national dialogue to include everyone, including those who have taken up arms against his government.
He said if the national dialogue will be inclusive, you know, there are people who will talk when it is not the policy of the government. Until we go and reach myself now, but at the present moment, I know that the president, according to his statement, In Parliament, he said this national dialogue is inclusive. And last time, even the president declared in the national prayer days that if I have done anything, forgive me, God, give me wisdom, so that we solve the problem of spousal union.
Joseph Okello Nago, chairman of the United Sudan African Party and a member of the steering committee on the national dialogue, says his party believes the process should be inclusive.
Dialogue means you have to meet all the stakeholders, whether they are armsmen or they are civilians, they've got to be met.
Ukel says it is premature to say that X and Y will be excluded because it is the committee which will decide who takes part in the national dialogue, which the president had said in December would begin sometime this month. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
U.S. President Donald Trump's new budget proposal has been met with harsh criticism among Democratic lawmakers and concerns among some Republican lawmakers. One humanitarian advocate warns there will be more suffering around the world if deep cuts are made to U.S.-funded aid programs. Ian Bio has more from Washington.
President Trump's budget chief, Mick Mulvaney, told reporters at the White House yesterday that the budget represents a shift in U.S. foreign policy priorities, adding that it represents a change from what he calls soft power diplomacy.
He wants more money for defense, more money for border enforcement, more money for law enforcement generally, more money for the vets, more money for school choice, and then to offset that money with savings elsewhere so that all of that is done without an additional dollar added to the deficit.
The proposed budget, which the White House calls a blueprint, would slash funding for the United Nations and its affiliated agencies, including UN peacekeeping. The White House says that the funding burden should be shared more evenly among members and that the U.S. would not contribute more than 25% for U.N. peacekeeping costs. The U.S. State Department and USAID would see an approximately 28% cut in their budgets, or about $10 billion in cuts. Francisca Vagad, senior advocate for Women and Girls for Refugees International, says the proposed cuts would not only affect humanitarian programs, including life-saving food assistance for refugees, but would also affect the United States' ability to diplomatically engage around the world.
In places like South Sudan, that kind of engagement is so critical to ensure that UNMISS is working well in its protection of civilians mandate, that all parties to the conflict can come to the table and seek a resolution and start to work towards peace to limit the impact of this conflict on South Sudan's population, and then, of course, limit the influx of refugees.
Congresswoman Karen Bass, a Democrat from the West Coast state of California, who recently introduced legislation that would rush $100 million U.S. dollars to USAID to counter the famine in South Sudan, says she will continue to monitor developments closely, but says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese are in need of immediate assistance in the country's man-made crisis.
We need to double down on our diplomatic efforts and do anything we can. But cutting off money is also not the solution, especially when you have people who literally will die if they don't get food. So I think that, you know, this is not the time when there is a humanitarian crisis that's right upon us to debate whether or not, you know, giving money or not is helpful.
The White House budget allows for funding of humanitarian assistance, including food aid, disaster and refugee program funding, with a focus on highest priority areas, while, quote, asking the world to pay their fair share. The budget would also cut funding to the World Bank and other development banks by some $650 million over 3 years. The Trump White House says even with the cuts to multilateral development banks, the U.S. would still remain a top donor. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Daybreak Africa time is 24 minutes past the hour. Time for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the results of the second round of 32 matches played across the continent in the CAF Champions League, where 16 teams have qualified for the group stages of this year's CAF Champions League. Five-time African champions TP Mazembe failed to reach the Champions League group stages on Sunday after a frustrating goalless draw with CAPS United of Zimbabwe in Harare to exit the continental competition on the away goal rule after a 1-1 draw on aggregate. Tunisia and Egypt remain the only nations with two representatives moving to the next round. In Kinshasa, Equatorial Guinean controversial midfielder Francisco Obama Ondo scored his third goal in CAF Champions League as AS Vita of DR Congo trounced Gambian Ports Authority 2-0 at the Stade de Martyrs in Kinshasa to book a place in the group stages of the competition. In other matches played across the continent, Zambian side Zanaco drew 0-0 with Young Africans of Tanzania in Lusaka. Zanaco progressed to the next round on away goals after drawing 1-1 in Dar es Salaam a week ago. In Addis Ababa, St. George of Ethiopia booked their place in the group stage after beating visiting AC Leopards from Congo 2-0, winning 3-0 on aggregate. In Kampala, defending champions Mamelodi Sundowns came from behind to draw 1-1 with KCCA FC in Uganda and advanced 3-2 on aggregate to send the defending champions into the next round. Elsewhere, Wydad Casablanca of Morocco booked a spot in the group stage, edging Gabonese outfit Mauna of Gabon 5-4 on penalties after losing 1-0 in Libreville. Another North African side, Al Ahly of Tripoli of Libya, were defeated 3-1 by FCUS Rabat, but made it to the next stage on a away goal. Brahim El Bahiri hit a brace to give FCUS a 2-goal advantage before Mouadad Ali halved the scoring 3 minutes into the second half for the Tunisians. In Ouagadougou, Algerian side USM Alger of Algeria secured the group slot despite suffering a 1-0 defeat by Real Kadiogo in Burkina Faso, and Madagascar giant CNAP Sports were eliminated by Cotton Sports of Cameroon after they were held 1-1 at home. In volleyball news, Al Ahly started their journey in the African Club Championship in Tunisia with a straight set win over Cameroon's Bafia, 3-0. Al Ahly will meet Esperance later today, and the last match against Al Ahly Benghazi will be played on Tuesday. And in preparations for the June World Championships, about 300 athletes are in Dakar, the capital of Senegal, for the 2017 International Taekwondo Competition. According to the organizers, the main purpose of this event, which will have athletes and officials from 20 countries across 4 continents, is to strengthen the status of Senegalese and African Taekwondo and its capacity to host an international competition. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Voter registration for Sierra Leone's 2018 presidential and parliamentary elections begins today, Monday. The process will run for a month and is limited to Sierra Leoneans in the country. Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, says President Edgar Lungu's speech on national values and principles delivered last Friday to Parliament should have focused more on bread and butter issues affecting most Zambians. In his speech, the president talked about increasing cases of moral decay in the country, the need for Zambians to show patriotism by buying Zambian-made goods and services rather than foreign goods. And Ugandan authorities on Sunday stopped an outspoken Makerere University researcher from leaving the country. Dr. Stella Nyanzi said she had been invited by Amsterdam University to be a keynote speaker at an international conference that should have begun yesterday, Sunday. And that's it for this Monday, March 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a productive week.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Join host Lenore Modu, reassessing your health stress in 2017 with Ken Red Cross, internal medicine and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202 205 9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.